To try to extract this. Well, my general idea was the observation that when you have a classical system, a small classical system that is part of a larger, bigger classical system, and then you have, and you can consider the observables and their Poisson brackets, and then they're the subalgebra is a it is close to undertaking Poisson brackets of the full observable algebra. And then when you consider the embedding that this small this small system of observables has into the full system by just being observables of the full system, then I can just take the fullback analytic embedding and I can reconstruct just then I can make this full theory, observables in full theory, small. I can reduce them to observables in small theory. So really, the question that I, that this is equivalent to on the mathematical side is, how do you debate, how do you quantize, how do you do the, such a pullback trick in a quantum theory in a non-commutative algebra of observables, basically. And this is good by this, by the previous talk already introduced many of the basic features of non-commutative algebras. And what I will do here, I will not go through the entire mathematical conception, I will rather give a simple example and show the structure of this, and then extract the relevant structure. And what it turns out is that well, something that is classically rather, that seems classically obscure is you can recover an embedding. Say you have a space, a small space, and you embed it in a larger space. So, say you have a small space and you embed it into a larger space. Then you can recover this embedding from an embedding of a vector bundle that is over this and a vector bundle that is over there. So suppose this is a bundle map and I can use the projection in the vector bundle and I can recover this embedding. So this seems a rather awkward step like that I do in between, but actually this is how it can be generalized for a non-commutative algebra. And I want to use this exact method, the non-commutative method that I just described, this vector bundles, and apply this to loop quantum gravity. I will have to use the Y form of loop quantum gravity as it, because this construction just works for C star algebras, and extract. And I do basically as a proof of principle and as a first example. How to extract a homogeneous isotropic circuit from loop quantum gravity, and this is what we call cosmology. So, this is my black point, and this picture was taken in September. But it could have been taken at any given day. The point that I want to make with this picture is that a series, you always have ideas, and you always want to do something, but you neither have the space nor the time to work it all out. So you have to extract something, some relevant things. And now I do this, I want to do cosmology ultimately. So suppose I have a model for the entire universe on this blackboard, on this whiteboard actually, then somewhere I would have to describe this whiteboard, all the properties it has, plus how I discovered or how I wrote everything down and so on. So this must appear somewhere there. This is what I indicated with the smaller region here. And then of course I have to do this again and again with this region here. And this is where this hole comes from. This is basically the Gödel paradoxon, the self-described paradoxon. So this is now a stronger motivation than just extracting something that's relevant, because in cosmology it's really essential. So Let's do something really simple. Say we have, we consider a, I say complex cafe system, but I choose the simplest one you can think of. You just have n particles in one dimension. So you have a phase space given by the positional momentum. You have servables, which are just functions, complex value functions. The real ones are the observables. And you have the usual Poisson bracket. And then we want to extract the relevant sectors. For example, say n is 10 to the 23, like some macroscopic volume, and these are gas molecules, then I'm maybe interested in their collective behavior, just of this volume of gas. I'm maybe just interested in the average position and the average momentum, or the sum of all positions and sum of all momenta. So, and this is then, because this is when I have my my system of observables on a gas molecule, on a cubic meter or liter of gas, and this is really what I measure, and not the positional momentum of each one of these molecules. So I have a reduced set of observables, and now I have some embedding of this smaller system into the full system. And this is given, I just call this map I. And this map I is for a Poisson map, this means that it commutes with applying the Poisson bracket. There's a small Poisson bracket on this reduced observable system, and there's obviously this full Poisson bracket on the full system. So this is the necessary ingredient that I need, and then I have this map I here, and as I motivated just right before, the pullback under this I, which is when we put the observables to the foreground, when we put these functions on phase space to the foreground, I have this classical algebra of, say, smooth functions, so you can always take Poisson brackets and certain compacts and for other technical reasons. And then you have an algebraic structure. Now we can do this really abstractly. And you have a commutative C star algebra. There's also this supreme. Yes.
Yeah. So I have a question which maybe will help me understand the matter of technicality. Can you do this before you do this to quantum gravity? Can you do this to classical general relativity?
I haven't applied it to classical general relativity. There are some technical difficulties.
But before that, I just have a conceptual question. So,
yes.
I might think that freedom of relative work cosmology is a average description of some solutions to the Einstein equations, where the A variable measures the volume of the whole space-time and it has a dynamic. But that's not actually what Friedman-Robinson work cosmology is. Friedman-Robinson work cosmology is not an averaging or a coarse graining of the dynamics of general relativity. It's the description of one solution out of the infinite dimensional solution space. So restricting from an infinite dimensional solution space to one solution or one small class of solutions is not the same thing as constructing averaged or coarse-grained observables of the Lorentz system.
Yes, this is true, and actually this equivalencing out, as you described it, is coarse-grained. This is exactly the reason why I haven't done it for general relativity yet. I will go through a much simpler example later, because there it's rather difficult to get observables to begin with, and then, basically, at the end, at least for classical theory, you would have to have your observables, some sure observables, and this is just hard to get. I mean, you don't get it.
But it's easier in quantum gravity?
No, but there are some steps, at least at a kinematical level, you can go around something.
So your phase space reduction doesn't include the submanifolds of solutions of equation motions. I mean, I haven't seen the dynamics besides just Poisson brackets you wrote down. So when you do the phase space reduction, you're not considering the manifold or the solutions? Or the
I'm not doing this. I will talk about that later. I will come back to that point. So in this sense, when I now put these observables into the foreground, these functions on phase space, then the reduced sensitivity point of view would be that my measurements separate only the points on this smaller phase position. And in particular, or in turn, I could say my measurements are insensitive to those functions that vanish there. So I just factor this ideal of functions that vanish on this embedded phase space out. And then I get like this formula here that I have this, my embedding, the pullback under my embedding, as now understood as algebra, is the same as if I factor out this functions of value. So this really contains in this interpretation equivalence classes that agree on functions that agree on. So my objective is to quantize this pullback tree. The problem is that the phase space in the quantum theory, I mean, you could think about the quantum theory as being a non-commutative phase space. This is actually, I think, to my knowledge, how the people who did mathematical non-commutative geometry first conceived it, and they thought about it as a non-commutative phase space. So I wrote divided integrated form of the Heisenberg equation relations here, which is nothing else than which is where I put the foreground that I have to work with these stars. And the problem, of course, is that we don't have that, since this is a non-commutative space, I don't have this sense of embedding something to begin with, so I need to do something different that is equivalent. So, on the other hand, I do not want to reduce the classical phase space and then say, okay, now I have this reduced classical phase space, and now I do the same procedure that I have done in the full theory, say, in full loop quantum gravity, and quantize it again, but I want to extract this as a subsystem. And this is what I indicated with this structure E here. This A should just be the algebra of quantum observables, and this A should be the Hilbert space on which they are represented as linear transformations, and this type of representation, when you think about of A to be abstract, to exist abstractly before you give it a Hilbert space of the situation, and this pi is just the representation. So I have to impose certain conditions to on this, that all this makes sense. First, let's go to the lower line here. We have this full system of this full system of observables, and we do this pullback under the embedding, and we obtain the reduced system. This is what I just put on the previous slide. And then we want the construction E to be such that it reproduces this here, and when I take the classical limit, and I will specify this in a couple of slides, what I mean with this h bar going for zero, then I want to arrive at the right classical limits for one. And for two, this is why I put this h here, because it's really important. I want to match certain vacuum expectation values. In particular, I want to find a dense set of operators O in the full algebra here, that such that some linear combinations of these operators can approximate any element here. And I want to have the correspondence with certain operators in this reduced theory, such that at least for these the vacuum expectation values are exactly the same. And this in turn means if I have a GMS representation, for example, a cyclic representation, I just will at the end determine my entire Hilbert space structure. Yes.
So W0, omega 0 and omega are ground state in the...
Yes, oh, sorry, this is, I didn't mention that. Yeah. This is supposed to be the ground state for... this is supposed to be the vacuum state here on this reduced plane algebra, and this is supposed to be the vacuum state in the full plane algebra.
And so there really is a Hamiltonian that tells you which is the ground state or which is the vacuum state as well. So similar algebra observables is some...
No, I mean, I say vacuum state, I mean it in a mathematical sense as a... I used the physical term vacuum state, but I mean it in a mathematical sense of being a state out of which I can construct a cyclic representation.
Well, I guess I have a question which is related. You have two conditions there, but I would have expected the third condition on the dynamics. That is, if it's an Hamiltonian system, you would like...
Yes.
Yeah. This is that the full Hamiltonian is mapped to something reasonable to reduce here, all the Hamiltonian constraints too.
So let's go back. Let's go back a couple of slides here. When you have this matching of Poisson brackets here from the full theory and the reduced theory, that this Poisson bracket is the same as this Poisson bracket. Then the Hamiltonian vector field will coincide for any function. So when I demand that this is a Poisson mapping and it's a full-bracket Poisson mapping, then I'm ensured that I get this. So let's do this with some pictures.
So at the quantum level, then you restrict also that you have this mapping exactly because you can have some anomalies.
Okay. Can you say that again?
At the quantum level, what would be the easiest?
On the quantum level, I will show that what I mean. This will be the physically interesting embeddings that I will talk about later. But let's first give you some pictures because then you can and you don't have all the abstract. I want to build, for example, start to enter a forest. And then I hope it's visible here that I indicated a function on this torus here. This should indicate an observable on this space. And then I restrict this function to this circle here, and then it's obviously a function here on this circle. This is supposed to be the circle. The distance to the circle is supposed to be the value of the function. So, the strategy that I already gave is, well, we are given such a Poisson embedding, such a embedding and Poisson structures match. And I said earlier, well, the fallback, the direct fallback trick won't work, but let's try vector abundance over this. This is just a defiler. So I will give you a picture in a moment. That you fiber something over your phase space gamma.
So sorry to understand. So I, in your example, where is exactly I? Gamma is what, the space of
function. Gamma is the phase space. So this is a reduced. This is the embedding of the.
So it contains only x and v, and then I of x is the sum over x I.
Yeah. For example, in this case. And then I just take, for example, the most trivial of all abundances, the complex line bundle, which is just the product of this space and the complex plane.
How can you be sure that your gamma zero, gamma naught, has a non-trivial intersection with the subspace of solutions? I mean, what?
This is actually a problem. This is a problem that I will address later. And it turns out there is a problem with quantum gravity that I haven't solved how to do this yet, and there are hints what to do, but it's not done yet. Well, then instead of considering the embedding I consider a larger embedding eta of the vector bundle, so I just take these these lines over each point, these fibers over each point, and I invent it. And the simplest thing that is a vector, but actually in this case it's the only thing you can do, is that you do that you map a point in phase space exactly to the point kind of vector and a point in the fiber to set the complex number of these. We could do some linear map on this, but not on this. And then the idea is to recover this embedding I here, just using the projection in this fiber bundle at this embedding. Yeah. So classically, I have done nothing else than what I have done here with my plugin here. I have, this was actually, I bought this in the United States. So I cut the wire. I rewired it to go to a European plug. And now I'm using this adapter to hook it again to an American system. So I have just re-expressed it in a much more complicated way, which was much easier to begin with, but this is how it works, and this is something that will work for the system. So, and then any function, F on a full phase space, then I want to restrict it to a Gamma knot, and this is previously I have done it by doing this pullback under the Poisson embedding, but now I project down the Poisson embedding of this vector bundle. I have to give this a little more meaning than I wrote down here. This is binary, it's just a tilde and just to indicate the correspondence between it. Now let me give you a few pictures. So we again have this embedding of the circle into the torus. Let's do fibers of each point. So the green fibers are here. And then I have an embedding of this vector bundle, this bundle structure. And then I get here, I indicated a certain patch in the circle here with blue, and I indicated another coordinate patch, gray, there. And then here I can recover this blue segment from the gray segment by projecting down in the fiber. So this is what I indicated as using the projection. But I use the full projection the full system. So when we take classical observable surface, we have this algebra of functions. And what it turns out, and this is a mathematical theorem, so I don't have to worry about it, is that any vector bundle, any finite-dimensional vector bundle, is a finitely generated projective module over this C-star algebra. So this is just what mathematicians tell me. And mathematicians tell me even more. If I have a complex vector bundle, and if I have a Hermitian structure, something that is just, for example, this here, take this simple module by taking two functions, pairing them up, so I have a two-dimensional fiber over each point, and I introduce this Hermitian function, this Hermitian structure that continuously depends on the phase space, something like this here, then I have exactly the projection. And this is rather easy to see because here I have elements of the sections in the vector bundle, and I evaluate this and I get a function. So the idea is to recover these functions in the phase space, and this is exactly non-commutative geometry. That's what you always do. You, instead of considering a space, you consider functions on the space, and instead of considering a vector bundle, you consider the sections of the vector bundle and functions over this thing. And then you use this Hermitian structure. So what I have written before is that we recover this embedding of a phase space by the image of under this of this non-commutative version of the projection. So now we have everything in a language that is already in the non-commutative way. These guys here that vector bundles that have such a structure with values in the algebra.
So you see the small c, the cc stands.
Oh, this is for technical reasons. I say of compact support because it's just for technical reasons. It has nothing to do with like with my general point of view.
I'm a bit lost. So at some point you introduce a fiber. Is it important for what you're saying here?
No, this is now exactly where this is the fiber here and I use space here and I have and the fiber bundle is just that I have a fiber over each point. And in this case I just took a simple example that I have a fiber with two complex dimensions. Which is just that I associate over each point a complex plane, basically. And a product of two complex things. And, but then I can use any such scalar functions and make a function of, rather simple. You use this structure here to take two functions, to take a pair of functions, and you make a single function of it, which is the representation of the non-commutative space in non-commutative geometry. So this was now at this point I depart from the previous presentation of this talk, and I go rather through a simple example, through a very simple example. I assume we have quantum mechanics on the torus, and I just say it's on U1 square. So it doesn't matter if it's the same. It's just that the group structure so it's simpler to write down. So the configuration variables are just these functions on the torus as before. And then I need the momenta. The momenta are just, these are the y. This is the I take exponentiated momentum. This is why I'm very simple for similar operations have been introduced before, and I want them to be unitary. So I want them to be unitary operators. They should have this Heisenberg commutation relation that they when I have this here. They basically act as translations on the group of this. Of the configuration. Then I have the usual Schrödinger representation on the Hilbert space of square integral functions on the torus. There's also nothing fancy that happens. And now my reduced sensitivity can be stated rather simple, and I say I want to consider just the torus. I can, for example, say I'm only sensitive to one of the coordinates. If I have the theta 1 and theta 2 to be the two canonical coordinates on the torus, then I can say, okay, my measurements are only sensitive to theta 1. And in this case, because I have split them already, I can just do the simplistic approach and suppress all the theta 2 dependence here. And then I get the configuration. And when I do this, when I just do this suppression, and this is also, there's no fancy math involved, I just suppress this, and I get this configuration variables, and I get this reduced space of configuration variables, which is just the functions that are independent of phi 2. Or I should have written theta 2, excuse me. And this is then the functions on the circle. And the same is on the line operators, I will just consider those equivalence classes that act the same here, and it turns out that this is just the translations in U1. And then, using a rather simple approach, I integrate over the phi 2, and all these are independent of phi 2, so I can get the Schrödinger state, and it's really just integrating over this U1 here. So with suppressing this, with suppressing the dependence on the phi 2 coordinate, I have achieved that. Let's look a little bit about on the structure, but that we had here. And this is now the inner resting fabric where the mass comes into play, because we have these, it turns out that very close operators, this is something that in physics, where physicists know that we have two, when you have a Hilbert space, and you take one of these operators, then we have a map that takes two elements of the Hilbert space and maps them into an operator. And this is this head graph here. And this is something stated algebraically, in terms of the algebra, something that is very similar from a subset of these, from a subset of the Hilbert space, then it is really this here. So I have this, and there are certain observations that you can make about this. One, they can be built from the configuration variables. From any two configuration variables, I can build one of these rank one operators. Two, they're dense in the C-star algebra. It turns out this is actually, if there are questions about it later, there is a rather instructive proof for that. And that the configuration variables, this is now the essential point why I did this whole thing with the embedding of the vector bundle, because these are now elements of the community system algebra, because they're just the configuration variables. So with them I can use the embedding tree again.
So this is the analysis of your fiber you are in the in general.
Yes. So in general the fiber is these functions are the first. And this rank one operator that maps two of these functions in the torus into this operator that acts like this, or which is essentially something like this sketch here. This is my Hermitian structure. Just that it now, instead of having values in a commutative system algebra, it has values in a non-commutative system algebra. But this is our difference. It turns out then these rank one operators satisfy all the postulates for all these functions for an inner product if you generalize the inner product to model this.
Can I ask you, sir, a little try to understand what your claim is here? So, at some point you want to simplify this stuff. So, at some point you want to take what? Some algebra of the observable, which is non commutative and symmetry reduced.
Yes.
So the basic difficulty is that because they don't commute, it's not possible.
Yeah.
So then you do some trick, which is what? To make it.
Which is that possible. I use this embedding of the vector bundles.
So then.
It's an intermediate step. And then I use.
Then which vector bundle do you choose? Canonically associated
with the bundle? On the second next slide, you will see which one I will always choose. There is a canonical choice.
So if I want to be very simple, I want to reduce, I want to choose X and P outside, out of XI and PI, but they don't commute. So what do you do to, what's the strategy you mean here?
I will come to that point later. What you can do with this trigger and what you can do with this trigger.
So because before it goes at the level of the Hilbert space. The level of the Hilbert space, because it's on the half of the phase space, you can reduce. There's no problem.
Okay.
But then you want to go beyond. Is that what you
Yes.
So the way I understood your previous slide was that if I have a symmetry, then I can take the Hilbert space, reduce the Hilbert space, and that's fine. And then you want to do that at the level of operators now. Is that what you mean? Or?
The previous example was that I really have a commutative algebra of functions on the torus. And I want, because this is always a community algebra, this quantized product and quantized, or the quantized operation.
You went up at the quantum level?
No, this was not at the quantum level. This was to illustrate what my strategy is. This was to say, okay, then I do this, and then I can reduce that. And then I can use this pullback under the embedding. So, basically, So, but now, let us explore this a little more, what we have. We have the following. With our reduced sensitivity point of view, we have correspondences between the configuration variables. One is, and I have just, for reasons, because I started writing this, like this P and I, I've called this P that takes a function on the torus here, on the full configuration space, and restricts it to the reduced configuration space. And I call this P. And in our case, this is P, the thing that suppresses the CO2. And it's, I've got this exactly the wrong way around. Let's put it here. So my P takes a function on the torus to a function on S1 by just f of theta 1 theta 2 becomes an f of theta 1 and say 0. Or I can say I integrate over the theta 2. Something that makes it to just depend on theta 1. And then the I is choosing the representative. So I have an f of theta 1, which is this theta 1, 0, for example. And I choose, when I choose this theta 1, 0 here as a representative function, it is occurring here. So basically, I have an equivalent class here. The P takes F into the equivalence class of functions that all coincide on the circle. And the I gives me one representative, for example, that one is, that is associated with the zero mode pattern, for example, and then I have this pair P and I. And these are then, and this is what I can use to do my quantum embedding, which is when I have a pair of such linear mappings between two algebras of configuration variables, and that they match, that they are basically identities when I compose them on the respective image, on the image of E in the equivalence classes, respectively on the image of I of representative functions, when I combine them, then these contain the entire quantum embedding. And then I can use a rather simple trick, because then I do to each one of these rank one operators O, as that depends on F and an H, I associate the rank one operator T that depends on F and H. And these F and H are functions on the torus. And now I take a reduced configuration variable, a function on the circle. And this is mapped by this formula here. So it takes a representative for this V0, for this function on the circle, acts with this rank one operator, and then projects it down. So this is really, this is the simplest thing that you can do. And it turns out that this is, that this correspondence is all you need. And then you can induce a vacuum state by really just applying this formula on the vacuum state. And if you use the right combination of I and P here, then you have a vacuum state on this rank one operators T. But the rank one operators T, now by construction, are linear transformations of this on the circle, the close on the circle, right? So, because I take here something that is a function on the circle, and what comes out is a function on the circle. So,
where's the quantum? So, T1 and T2 are the configuration variable. There's no non-commutativity.
Right? Yes.
Okay. So here you reduce the configuration space.
Yes.
So there's no non-commutativity.
Yes.
So the hard part usually of the reduction is, let's say, when you want to reduce the full phase space.
Correct. Yes.
So I don't know what F and H are still functions on configuration space.
They are still functions on configuration
space. So here you always are sticking to a commutative algebra.
Yeah, but the essential point is that these rank one operators, they are not commutative anymore. This is the point that what I also did in the I wrote it down here. That these are dense in the full sister algebra of quantum observables here. That these O of F and H span the four parameter. Basically, that I can expand any operator on the Hilbert space. When you think about it in terms of these. So I have an algebra of operators. And so I say any operator A is just sum over I lambda I phi I.
Okay. So if you want to reduce an operator, you say first you have to write it as a sum of this projection.
Yes.
And then once you know that, you have a reduction map for each of these
operators. Yes. But since these rank one operators are dense, and there is a proof for that. Mathematicians have proven that. So I can always do that, and if P and I are linear, then this is canonical. And there's just one way for each pair of P and I that phi can do this.
Is it unique?
No, this is dense. So if I take a different series to approximate this A, then the result will still be the same.
Yeah, but is the map independent of the series you take to approximate? Because I get two different ways to write down the same operator.
Yeah, this is a little bit hard to prove, but when you go to the algebraic level, you can go through a proof that works out. That you get the right operator algebra in the end. As an operator algebra, not as and there's quite some serious research involved that you can do that for an operator algebra.
So let's say I have any operator written as this sum. So now you want to write these elementary operators, you want to map them, to symmetry reduce them. So what is your, can you explain in words or more concretely what is this mapping?
Okay. Let's forget about factors then. The last point. Let's focus on this. This I define as a linear transformation on a configuration space of the circle, the spin up is supposed to be function on this circle. So then I take I of V naught, which is I, and it takes it is the fact this particular function coincides with I on theta and is independent of theta 2. Then I apply this operator, this rank one operator here, and then I project it down and I find, because this will in general not be in the same equivalence class. But this will in general, because I can say this is in the ground mode, this A just has the ground mode in theta 2, and this has some excited modes in theta 2, some higher exponentials. So this will in general, but then I take this projection again, this P, that gives me the right equivalence class. So then I have the linear transformation from a functional circuit to a functional circuit. So in an abstract sense, I have already algebra, non-commutative algebra.
But I guess there's maybe an infinite number of ways of choosing P or I or one of the two.
Yes, this is.
And then, so. This is so here it's a way to embed the thing.
Yes, this is a way to embed. This is a way, and let me go on because from this slide, if I had a little more time now, then I would go through this. Basically, I can do this whenever I have a configuration manifold, and I have a group of exponentiated momenta that closes and has a smooth action on this configuration manifold. And this is, and I'm not going to go through this detail here now, this is how I would have understood the classical image. And now we come to this part of the embeddings, which embeddings are interesting, or which embeddings are physically important. Now, let's suppose we would have a small system that would just consist of the configuration variables. And then they would all put something new. And I wanted to embed them into a full system that had that would first be the configuration variables, then some more configuration variables, and then line momentum. Then obviously I could embed them as such that I just take the first, and the first all brackets would be all reproduced. But this is not what we want physically, because we want also the momenta that are tangent to this embedded space. So we want all these tangential momenta. And in the previous version of this talk, I have gone through group points and the entire conversation procedure to really make this a sound mathematical statement. But basically, I consider only those embeddings that contain all the tangential momenta. They contain all of these. And I call these full embeddings. And then it turns out that these full embeddings, and this is under this assumption here, when I take a configuration space that is, it has to be locally compact for technical reasons, and the loop has to be locally compact. It has to have a free and proper action, but this is okay to restrict your momenta like that. Then it turns out that the full embeddings are just determined by such a pair P and R between the configuration variables. Now one is taking equivalence scatters and the other one is taking representatives. Oops, this was not where I wanted to go. So if we have these full embeddings, then we have these rank one operators, and I can go to mathematicians. They tell me for any such system there is a formula for these rank one operators. And I use the exact same trick that I associate with this, that I decorate this with this P and R, and I associate the non-commutative rank one operators and calculate the span of the T's, and this is then my embedded algebra. And then I induce the vacuum state again with just looking at, it's just using the same formula as before. And then I get a Hilbert space representation by doing a GNS construction out of this vacuum.
So the vacuum state is not unique because it depends on the choice of PNI, or not?
It depends on, in some cases, it depends on I. And I can classify those. This is exactly when the group of momentum transforms is too small. And there are certain spaces that are, there are certain representations, certain vacuum places that are inequivalent. And then it depends on the I. But for example, for Schrodinger quantum mechanics, it is not. Any state would be mapped exactly like this. Oh, and then we notice that this construction by construction reproduces the right limit, the right classical limit, in the sense that I have indicated on this slide before, because it is exactly those momenta that are tangential, these momentum transformations that are tangential to the V naught, to the reduced configuration operators. And then I have also, by this formula, I have this obvious matching of vacuum expectation values. This is exactly what I wanted before. So, now let me go quickly through how I use this sort of quantum gravity. In loop quantum gravity, you have cylindrical functions to start out with as your configuration variables. And then, and I use the bi-integrated form, so I use exponentiated momenta, and they act basically as pullbacks under a certain map that maps certain connections into a different connection, and it translates this cylindrical function to a cylindrical function on this translated connection. And I have this canonical bi-commutation relation, and I have this Lewis space representation of everybody who has done anything with loop quantum gravity is familiar with this very different functions on the, with respect to the architecture of Mordovsky. And now I want to do cosmology later. In the next slide, I want to do cosmology, so I take for the synthesis examples that the spatial manifold is R3, and I take. And the problem is that I have to equivalent, that I have to find these equivalence classes now. So I have to find some tame graphs. And I start out with some tame cylindrical functions where I can explicitly calculate the holonomy and then build these equivalence classes. So I start out and use first a cubic lattice, and then so this is just in a fiducial background, this is just a regular length. And then I have to add certain extra links, basically, that I can embed any kind of graph into a finite cube. And similarly, I have to do something exactly like that for the fluxes. And then I use stratified. And then with Jacobian morphisms, I basically apply a small extension of the different morphism group, which appears to be physical, to get the full theory of loop quantum gravity out of these tame ones, out of these cylindrical functions on tame graphs. I just apply this morphism and then do this well. And in the next slide is really just how I get these equivalence classes. I just take the isotropic, the homogeneous isotropic connections. I can calculate how any holonomy on a tame graph on the straight edge depends on this connection component. And then I construct this P and I on tame graphs only, and I use the different morphism covariance to find the right ones. So already here we see that if we have these tame graphs and we have introduced this artificial background length enough, and we get this, then all the matrix elements that will appear here will just be the new combinations of these P to the IK and C half. So I do this, so I build my equivalence classes by I take a cylindrical function, it depends on the graph gamma, and now I have to specify which tame graphs I associate with the graph, but you have to specify something that basically it turns out when you use this then this regular list with these extra links, then you can put everything, to embed any graph into a finite cube, and then I say I average up all these embeddings in this finite cube, for example, and then evaluate this at the symmetric connection at this, and then, well, no surprise, I get that my P of any spin network functions in any graph is just a linear combination of these e to the I to k and I over I have k and not c. And on the other hand, once I'm given one of these e to the I k and not c's, then I take a good, for example, a particular representative. This is not the integration there. This is just the holonomy along the first link in this lattice. And the first component, for example. And then I look at the transport operators, and our formula in this case just gives them that these rank one operators act like, and it's like, if I have to spin up a function as one and this two, that I project down, this is one, and as this two are built in a product with this simple cylindric function, as just the one one matrix element of this first limb. And then I extend this by linearity, and what I get is that I have quantum mechanics on the circuit, because when I denote this e to the I f I not c by k, then the multiplication operators just do what they do in quantum mechanics, and the y translations just do this translation on the circle. And so isotropic cosmologists, ordinary quantum mechanics, you want it similarly, you can do this for the local rotations matrix, so you have, except instead of three rotation axes, you have just one rotation axis, and it's in there, and then it is quantum mechanics on the torus.
Is that one the optimized?
Pardon?
I'm just not used to notation, which we can call local rotation symmetric. Do you mean one of the Bianchi-1s?
I took the Bianchi 1 to begin with, and then the isotropic is that I also impose isotropy in addition to homogeneity. And then the error is that I relax isotropy, and I just assume one rotation axis that is in there, instead of all three. And so...
I'm sorry, I should ask you to...
I'm going to this rather quickly now, and then I'm already at my conclusion. So the idea is, now, Lutheran gravity has three sets of constraints, and I have to impose these constraints also. So, first I have this gas constraint, and it turns out, people know that traces over closed loops, over traces over anonymous of closed loops, are gauge invariant. And I built these equivalence classes on these traces of closed loops, and it turns out that I can build a P and an I that has just traces over closed loops. And I again get quantum mechanics on a circle for the isotropic model. The difference here is now that I lose this factor 1/2 again. This is basically because you have a closed loop instead of an open link. And then the diffeomorphism constraint, if you look at the definition that I have given for P before, if you just extend this a little more than you're already in the dual Hilbert space, that has all the, if you sum over a little more, you are in the dual Hilbert space that contains all the solutions of the diffeomorphism constraint. So this is also no further restriction. And then this is surprising, I commented previously, but even if you impose the scalar constraint, there appears no further restriction. First I saw this was that the scalar constraint is too local, but now I think that it is basically a group of problem, and basically the Hamilton constraint is not linear in any meta. So instead of just translating the constraint, so just translating the constraint surface, it also deforms the constraint surface. And thus, when I build my equivalence classes, here's this where I have it here, and then I build equivalence classes, say I factor all others equivalent to this point, but then I have a finite Hamilton transform something like this, and then I have 3 points, for example, here that intersect here, and then I have spurious solutions, spurious additional solutions to that. So if you compare this to what Hashtikapuyeva and Yarodovsky have done, they have done, reduced classically and quantize again, and then they also have to reduce the constraints classically and quantize again. And this in turn had this awkward feature that there was no obvious matching of matrix elements when we reduce it from here. Instead, here I have this reduced sensitivity point of view. I'm close to full set of constraints, and I have an obvious matching of the matrix elements. And well, it turns out in the not parameter, this not did not appear in my Y operators here, as you saw here, and then you calculated. But the problem is this large Hamiltonian constraint surface. Well, and this is already where I want to conclude. This is the point that I want to conclude. Is that I have tried to show that a pullback under Poisson bedding is under Poisson bedding is really what we want to do at the observable level to extract a system of Donovan degrees of freedom. Then we have done this for these full embeddings. We could do this with a PNI. We use this, we were able to calculate the reduced quantum algebra and an induced representation. And I applied it to loop quantum gravity. I get rid of the minimal parameter, and I have less initial conditions. I have a discrete evolution. I don't have an evolution because the Hamiltonian is too lax so far. And this is actually the future. The first and foremost important point of my future work is that I construct, that I do this construction, which is invariant, at least locally under the scalar constraint, least form in the around the homogeneous isotropic connections. So thank you for your attention.
One question?
Sure. Okay. Suppose you do this for lattice, for Hamiltonian lattice Gauge theory.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, which are all, if what you've done is set up, you're all set up to do it. And your conclusion would be to do a bit of theory rather than anything related to QCD or the physics of QCD. You would get, I mean, the kinematics would go through, the diffeomorphic constraint had no role. So if you apply this to lattice Gauge theory, you'd get the same result.
Not really. And there is a point with that. The way I constructed this P here relied on the fact that I had a diffeomorphism invariant theory. Because otherwise, I would not be allowed to equivalence. Where was it? I would not be allowed to do this partial gauge fixing of the diffeomorphisms by building the equivalence classes. This is what I have done here.
Which equivalence classes? Sorry,
I want to build the equivalence classes of functions that depend in the same way on the isotropic part of the connection, the isotropic component of the homogeneous isotropic component of the connection of cylindrical functions. So.
Okay. So good. So what would you do instead if you were doing lattice QCD?
If I would do lattice QCD, I could. Again, use cylindrical functions, and I could do that, but I'm not sure, since I'm not sure what happens, because then you have this this artifact that the flux artifact. I'm not sure if it will give the same result. Because in lattice theory, to obtain the physical theory, you have to shrink the lattice down to length zero.
No, but even without shrinking the lattice space down to zero, lattice QCD.
Okay, if you do it with some finite lattice, then it would coincide with that. And it would be exactly coincide, but it would be biased.
And what role would the actual Hamiltonians? I mean, it seems like the Hamiltonian of lattice gauge theory would just crop out of your operator outputs because it doesn't.
Because it's a Hamiltonian constraint.
No, but in Hamiltonian lattice gauge theory,
I have not looked at it. I've actually evolved the lattice gauge theory to see what happens then, because that is a good point. And this is one of the ideas that I want to use to tackle this problem, to use some simpler model like lattice gauge theory and evolve to a finite evolution with the Hamiltonian operator to get to see what it does, because this is really what fails this so far, is that I have these too many solutions to consume.
So let's thank Richard.